The Red Hot Huberdeau tied the game with less than 30 seconds left in Dallas. Another two-point game for him. Now it's Duclair getting moving into the offensive zone in front. Huberdeau scores right off the get-go, just over a minute in. The Duke sets up Huberdeau, and it's 1-0 Panthers.
Haynes, Haynes will gain the zone. Flip one up, and he'll get to it. Back to Haynes. Puck is still in the corner there. Weegar would hack at it. Carolina will keep it in. D'Angelo walks the blue line to Teravainen. Teravainen scores! Upper 90 for 86, and Carolina ties it on the power play.
Verhaeghe got it to him, but he could not put it home. Now Verhaeghe speeds in with the puck. He's got a chance. He scores again! Carter Verhaeghe having himself a night, and he makes it 3-1 Florida, his second of the game.
Face off to the right of Bobrovsky. It's one and Shea, they'll hammer and score! Traffic out front, screening Bobrovsky. And the Canes off the draw, making a one-goal game. The puck will bounce to Mackenzie Weegar. He'll flip it to center ice. Cole, he'll settle it down and backhand this one back to the neutral zone. Now the Canes play it forward. Jarvis, he gets a step and scores! Seth Jarvis ties it up. It's three apiece in Carolina. Now it's worth the cousin Lyon. Robs Duclair. Oh, what a glove save by Lyon, but the puck's still free. Florida working it around up top for Ekblad. Now Barkov. He'll send it across for Duclair. Becca up top. Ekblad shot, and that's absorbed, and Lyon hangs on. Face-off coming up in the Canes, all the way around for Teravainen. He'll get it to Trocheck. Trocheck's pass, though, intercepted by Huberdeau. Two-on-one coming for the Florida Panthers. Huberdeau, he comes in. Stop, sends it across. Lucarainen is robbed by Lyon.
Well, as Svechnikov saves the day, maybe the game.
Shea, lead pass. Stolen away by Duclair. Duclair with the steal breaks in to give to Huberdeau. Looking in front, Duclair. Let's go home, baby! The Duke ends it! The feed from Huberdeau, and the Panthers win it in overtime, 4-3.
This is the Canes Corner Podcast with host Adam Gold, presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. The Canes Corner Podcast is part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now, here's your host, Adam Gold.
Welcome to the Canes Corner Podcast. I am Adam Gold. Thank you very much for spending some time with us. Hurricanes had their five-game winning streak come to an end. Still get a point out of it. Feel fortunate about that because I believe that the Florida Panthers were the better team. They outshot Carolina. They out-attempted Carolina. They out-face-offed Carolina. They didn't out-giveaway Carolina, meaning they gave the puck away less. Hurricanes weren't, they were okay, did get a power play goal, but the last three power plays weren't very good. Penalty kills were good. Penalty kills were way better than the power play, even though the power play did score a goal. But ultimately, the Florida Panthers come away with another win. Panthers are 2-0 against Carolina this year. Hurricanes lost in Florida and get an overtime loss here in Raleigh. They will play one more time. Remember, they had a game against Florida. It was supposed to be the first game after the break. They had that game wiped off the schedule. We'll see if when they put that game back. Remember, it was right before, or right after. It was supposed to be the first game after the break. That was it, that Monday? But they canceled all Monday games on the 27th, and that game has not been rescheduled yet. The Hurricanes have six games to reschedule. We don't know exactly where those are going to go. The team has been notified to an extent, but everything is tentative when you get right down to it. All right, Corey Lavalette of the North State Journal is going to join us a little bit later on. Hurricanes, again, have their five-game winning streak come to an end. Wasn't their best effort, not effort, but rarely is it an effort thing for Carolina. It wasn't their best performance tonight. And frankly, it could have been a lot worse. A lot of things happened in the game tonight. We'll get to all of it. First, a reminder, we're brought to you by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. If it goes outside of your home, and for the case of this argument, windows, even though they're both inside and outside, same with doors, exterior home improvements. You want to make your home more energy efficient, more beautiful, roofing, siding, entry doors, storm doors, they've got them at the Aluminum Company of North Carolina on Hamlin Road in Durham. Go check them out online for free, no obligation estimate at aluminumcompany.com. All right, let's get to a couple of things. We'll start with the lineup tonight. Jordan Martinook doesn't draw in. Understandable. They just beat Calgary last night. Martinook is ready to play. He is going to play this upcoming week. I'll be stunned if Martinook does not draw in at Philadelphia on Tuesday. Absolutely floored. Unless he gets hurt in practice on Monday, I'll be stunned if he doesn't play in Philly on Tuesday. And then you get to who has to come out of the lineup. I don't know who that might be. I mean, there are candidates to come out. Somebody's got to come out. Martinook's going to come back in. Could be Kotkaniemi, maybe. He's played very well of late, although maybe not so well tonight. It could be Martin Natchez, who I think has struggled the last, since the break ended. In the four games, I don't think we've seen great Martin Natchez. We've seen a couple of good things, but for the most part, he's been a puck mismanagement problem, and he was tonight. So maybe simple thing is to do what they did before, which was take Derek Stepan out of the lineup. But Stepan has been so good. I know the Hurricanes didn't win tonight, but they also didn't lose tonight in regulation. And the Hurricanes are 21-3-2 with Stepan in the lineup. So he does a lot of really good things. Now, if you take him out, you can install Kotkaniemi as a fourth-line center and roll four lines and even use Jordan Staal as a fourth-line center. And we're kind of trending towards that anyway, so maybe that's the way we're going to go. And if that's the way we're going to go, you might as well get to that sooner than, rather than later and get everybody ready. If that's where we're going to be in the postseason, it's not like Jordan Staal is going to be a fourth-line center playing 9 minutes. He's still going to play, 14 minutes. He's going to eat up shorthanded time, and they're going to roll four, and he's going to take extra face-offs anyway. So, that if that's the way we're going, you could do that. But it'll be interesting to see who comes out of the lineup. But I think Martinook would have been useful in a game like this. And I'll explain why in a second. The other guy that played tonight that might have been a surprise to a lot of people was the goaltender. Alex Lyon, who hadn't played in like 3.5 weeks or whatever it was for Chicago, because they had been down for a while. So Alex Lyon, who was called to the taxi squad and then surprisingly activated from the taxi squad for tonight because it was a mystery to a lot of people, who's not playing? Was it a COVID issue? And as it turned out, Antti Raanta has an upper body issue, and Freddie Anderson was pretty taxed from last night's game against Calgary. So they decided, Alex Lyon, you're the guy. So not exactly a recipe for success if you're the Hurricanes. You're down to your third goalie, a third goalie who hasn't played in almost a month against one of the highest scoring teams in the entire sport. Florida had scored 29 goals in the last five games. They just lost in a shootout, or I think it's either overtime or a shootout, in Dallas 6-5. They scored 6 goals the game before against Calgary, 5 the game before that, 9 the game before that against Tampa, although it was a shell of Tampa's team, and 4 the game before that. So at least 4 goals now in 6 straight. They've scored 33 goals in their last 6 games. That's 5.5 goals a game. And that's what Alex Lyon is staring at. And it didn't go well. Jonathan Huberdeau, or Huberdeau, what do you want to call him? Jonathan Huberdeau, less than a minute in, makes it 1-0.
The red-hot Huberdeau tied the game with less than 30 seconds left in Dallas. Another two-point game for him. Now it's Duclair getting moving into the offensive zone in front. Huberdeau scores right off the get-go, just over a minute in. The Duke sets up Huberdeau, and it's 1-0 Panthers.
Yeah, one of the things you talked to Rod Brind'Amour about Florida before the game was they're so good going from defense to offense. And I'm not even going to say it's defense to offense. They're just so good in transition when you make a mistake or when you don't get the puck in deep. And that's what Carolina didn't do a great job of tonight. There is a formula to making life very difficult for the Florida Panthers, and that is making them go the full 200 feet. Carolina did not do a good job of that tonight. So, Trocheck gets in deep in the offensive zone on a forecheck. He overskates a puck. Florida comes quickly the other way. And Carolina had three guys back, but they were just skating back. They were a little bit too passive. Anthony Duclair holds up, passes it across to Huberdeau, just to the left of Lyon. Pesci is a little bit too far away. His gap is not tight enough, and Huberdeau makes it 1-0. So that was 1:05 in. Canes get a power play. That's all good. Sebastian Aho with a great puck retrieval behind the net. He gets it out to Tony DeAngelo, and Carolina finds Teuvo Teravainen.
The Canes, Hanches, will gain the zone. Flip one up, and we'll get to it, back to Hanches. And the puck is still in the corner there. Weegar would hack at it. Carolina will keep it in. DeAngelo walks the blue line to Teravainen. Teravainen scores! Upper 90 for 86, and Carolina ties it on the power play.
That was Teravainen's 10th goal of the season, and I think this was sort of an indication that Sergei Bobrovsky was not on top of his game either tonight. And I shouldn't even say either, because I think Alex Lyon was fine. But this was not vintage Sergei Bobrovsky, because I'm not sure that the puck went over the shoulder. It almost looked like it went in between the glove arm and the body. That's the way it kind of looked to me. Maybe not. Maybe it did go off the shoulder or off the arm. But it certainly looked, maybe it went between the glove and the arm. I don't know. But it almost looked like it went through Bobrovsky as opposed to over Bobrovsky. So both of those goals happened in the first 3.5 minutes of the game. So it's 1-1. And Carolina was really getting away with murder in the first period. Too many giveaways, too many opportunities for Florida. Somehow, either through luck or Alex Lyon making some good saves or some good blocked shots, the game had stayed 1-1, but then Carter Verhaeghe comes up on a 2-on-1 that might have been deflected by Jacob Slavin, which made it a little bit more difficult for Lyon to make the stop. Looked like he got his glove on it, but it still got through. It all started with Steven Lorenz missing the goal high from relatively in tight. There's certain things that you have to do with Florida. Like sometimes a missed shot is the worst thing, because if you miss the net, it almost starts, you know, them in transition. And that's what happened there. And then Derek Stepan took a spill just at center ice, and that created the odd man chance. And then it was Carter Verhaeghe, and his 9th goal of the season makes it 2-1. That's how the period ended. Then we start in the second period. And remember, the Panthers scored 1:05 into the game when Huberdeau scored from Duclair. Verhaeghe didn't wait nearly that long to make it 3-1.
Verhaeghe got it to him, but he could not put it home. Now Verhaeghe speeds in with the puck. He's got a chance. He scores again. Carter Verhaeghe having himself a night, and he makes it 3-1 Florida, his second of the game.
Stahl and Kotkaniemi looked like they got a little either confused or neither could corral the puck. Maybe they got in each other's way in the neutral zone, and it comes in 3-on-2. Verhaeghe beats Lyon, and I'm like, wait a second. I thought we left that in the first period, and as it turned out, they didn't, but that's the way it goes. And then Brady Shea at 14-14 of the period, and I've said this before, the Carolina Hurricanes are the best team in the NHL at set pieces.
Now face off to the right of Bobrovsky. It's one, and Shea, they'll hammer and score! Traffic out front screening Bobrovsky.
Jordan Staal wins an incredible faceoff. Now, very contested. Staal goes to the ice. There's bodies everywhere. Staal eventually, with like on all fours, essentially just kind of shovels it back with, it took a while for this to happen, shovels it back to Pesci, who got it across to Shea, who was just an absolute bomb, a great net front presence by Steven Lawrence in front. He was the only guy in front of Bobrovsky and actually jumped to avoid the puck and clearly made it difficult for Bobrovsky to see it. Any goalie in the NHL is going to stop that shot if they can see it. But Lawrence did a great job in front. It's one of the things that he is doing very well of late, and I think it's going to be hard to take Steven Lawrence out of the lineup when Martinook draws back in, and that I'm almost positive will be on Tuesday in Philadelphia. So now it's 3-2. Carolina's only one shot away, and that shot came very early, 1:45 into the third, and it was the young kid.
The puck will bounce to Mackenzie Weegar. He'll flip it to center ice. Cole, he'll settle it down and backhand this one back to the neutral zone. Now the Canes play it forward. Jarvis, he gets a step and scores! Seth Jarvis ties it up! It's 3-3 in Carolina!
So Ian Cole won a battle for the puck on the wall. I thought it was good work by Cole. He got the puck up to Aho, who knew exactly where Seth Jarvis was. He turned, fired a straight line pass to Jarvis, who exploded through the defense and beat Bobrovsky. It looked glove side, so it's sort of a short side goal because he was on the right side of the ice. Excellent goal. It was Jarvis's sixth of the season. And Carolina, at that point, looked like they had gotten control of the game. And then we started to see a couple of really screwy penalties. Personally, Brett Pesce called for, I think they called it interference. I'm just going to double check that. Brett Pesce called for interference. I don't know how that's interference with the puck at Ryan Lomberg's feet. Don't know how it's interference at all. Pesce did get his arms up high, but if you're going to call the penalty there, I think you got to call a rough. I don't even get it. It's not interference to me. The puck was there. So to me, that's a bad call. Regardless, Carolina kills off the power play. And then about, 8 minutes later, Jordan Staal goes off for... They call it roughing. They initially called it a high stick. They called it roughing. I mean, it's an absolutely legit, legal, clean hit on Alexander Barkov. I didn't understand it. That's life, I guess. Hurricanes killed off both those penalties. Frank Vetrano took an interference call against Jacob Slavin, which I will also say might have been shaky. I don't know. I don't know what was a penalty and what wasn't tonight. There were tons of extra stuff after whistles. There was holding the stick all day long tonight that they let go, and that's okay. I don't want to see a parade to the penalty box for either team. The longer the game is played at 5-on-5, the better off I think all good teams are. If you can eliminate as much special teams out of the equation as possible, then the better team's probably going to win. I also like the flow of games when there's minimal penalties. So I'm not looking for penalties to be called, but it did look to me like they went out of their way to call penalties in the end of the game, in the third period of the game. So I didn't like either of the calls on Carolina, and I think if you're Frank Vetrano, maybe you don't like the call on Jacob Slavin. I also didn't understand why Vetrano was barking at Alex Lyon. but there was a bunch of that tonight. Maybe Lyon and maybe he's dropping multi-syllable words using his Yale education. Anyway, and then we get to overtime. The game got to overtime, and Carolina had a great chance early. Andrei Svechnikov comes in on his backhand, brings it to the forehand. And then just couldn't get it through. Bobrovsky made a good save. And that was really the last good thing Carolina did in the overtime. There were unnecessary chances taken with the puck. And then the most unnecessary chance was Brady Shea trying to pass it up the wall past Jonathan Huberdeau and Anthony Duclair. But that pass wasn't there.
Shea, lead pass, stolen away by Duclair. Duclair with the steal breaks in to give to Huberdeau. Looking in front, Duclair. Let's go home, baby! The Duke ends it! The feed from Huberdeau and the Panthers win it in overtime, 4-3.
Well, what more do you have to say? Thanks to the Florida Panthers Television Network for that. All right, real couple of quick, very quick thoughts about this before we hit a break and Corey Lavalette will join us. We've been building to this. Yes, there are the lack of flow to the season has contributed to Carolina's really sloppy play. And it's the precision that I think is missing from Carolina's game. Because even when they did have, puck possession tonight, they weren't clean in their ability to finish and create scoring chances out of their possession. It reminded me, I'm trying to remember the game that they played. I don't even know at this point. I think it was before the break, but there were just little things that they weren't doing very well. And they had trouble clearing the puck out of the zone today. They had trouble finding the puck. They had neutral zone puck management issues. Svetch gave the puck away a bunch. Natchez has been giving the puck away way too much. And I thought Natchez and Kotkaniemi struggled tonight as well. And maybe that's why they were kind of both slid down and played with Derek Stepan on the fourth line. Although maybe that the fourth line was created with Staal playing with Nino and Steven Lawrence. I don't know. Lawrence has been playing well. But Carolina has been building to this. So I'll just lay it out this way. Carolina got away with a not good game against Montreal because Montreal didn't have an NHL lineup. They won that game 4-0, but they weren't good. They were wide open and sloppy, even though they had tons of scoring chances, wide open and sloppy in Columbus. Once they stopped being wide open and sloppy, they blew the Blue Jackets' doors off. But they were still wide open and sloppy and were down 4-0 to a team that in all that. Then you get another 5-day break. You come back and you play Calgary, and they were booty in the first period yesterday and lucky as all hell not to be down 2-0, and instead it was 1-1, and then they were better the rest of the way. They were really good in the second period, better the rest of the way, and end up winning at 6-3. So, and I think part of that was if you looked at, natural stat trick, I mean, the expected goals was still an advantage for Calgary over Carolina. I think the reason they win that game is because Dan Vladar wasn't very good. And Freddie Anderson was. Again, how he wasn't one of the three stars was a little bit of a miracle. He stopped 20 shots in the first period. It could have been a disaster in the game, but Carolina was 1-1. Then today, a lot of the same puck management issues, a lot of the same lack of precision kind of helps Florida. When you play Florida, you got to get pucks in deep. I mentioned I was going to tell you why Martinook would be very useful in a game like this, because Jordan Martinook is not an east-west player. I think when you play Florida, you need north-south. I think you need to be straight line, crash the net, use physicality to get behind their defense, work from behind the goal out, because I think when you do that, Florida is incredibly talented offensively from the blue line. Similar, although much better, than Columbus or to Columbus, where Columbus is more of a mindset of offense from the blue line. Those are the players they've got. Florida, I mean, Ekblad's okay defensively. I'm not saying he's not good defensively, but he's an offensive player. Brandon Montour is an offensive player. Mackenzie Weegar, more of an offensive player to me. And I think that if you can get behind their defense, you can do things. You can get work done. But Carolina really didn't spend a lot of time behind Florida's defense. And there was a little bit too much cutesy stuff. And I think the cutesy isn't going to work against a team that is looking to take your cutesy and shove it down your throat. And that's the way Florida was tonight. Florida is a team that wants to counterattack. And they're always going to be sending guys flying. And that's my feeling as to why Jordan Martinook would be effective in a game like this. You need a little bit more grind in a game when you're playing the Florida Panthers, I think, to be effective and impact their game. I mean, Carolina could win can win a wide-open skating game, too. So I'm not saying that you can't. But Carolina is better equipped to play the other way, and I don't believe Florida is. Anyway, that's just my feeling about that game. Real quick, now we're going back to the point where it's going to be very similar to a real NHL season. No kidding. So the Hurricanes' five-game winning streak is over. They have still gotten points in six straight, and they are 9-1-1 in their last 11. So they will play at Philadelphia on Tuesday, home against Columbus on Thursday. Vancouver comes in Saturday. Then the Hurricanes go to Boston on Tuesday and then come home against the Rangers for the first time this season, the Rangers on Friday night, the 21st. That should be fun. So we have not played the Rangers yet. Hurricanes have not played the Penguins yet. They have played just once against Washington, once against Tampa, once against Toronto. Those are the essentially the playoff teams. Boston is also in playoff position. I'm just going by point percentage. I'm not going by points in the standings because we have such a wide disparity of games played. But in terms of point percentages, Boston, Toronto, Florida, Tampa in the Atlantic, Pittsburgh, Carolina, Washington, and who did I just forget? The Rangers in the Metro. I think those are the eight best teams in the Eastern Conference. Carolina has not played them a lot. So it's going to be a lot of fun over the next few months. Corey Lavallette, North State Journal, is going to join us here on the Canes Corner Podcast, Morning After Edition. Let's big picture this first, and then we'll kind of whittle our way down. Did the correct team get 2 points tonight?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when you have a good team waiting for you, after you played the night before and then you're going to your number three goalie who hasn't played in 3 weeks, I think to get away with a point, you're probably happy, even if you're not happy with everything that happened.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about Carolina. I kind of think we've been building to this. Didn't manage the puck very well, didn't play very well, I thought, against Montreal. First game after the long break, and Montreal just wasn't good enough to make him pay. Columbus played a poor game, even though Carolina gave him a ton of transition chances. Once that stopped, Columbus went away. Thought Calgary was partly good, but I think their goaltender was bad. I didn't think Dan Vladar was all that good last night. Today, Carolina made mistakes against a team they can't make mistakes against. I mean, Florida's just too lethal the other way.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to judge a whole lot of what's going on now with the stop and start nature of all this. And, I think that's all going to clearly sort itself out in the last couple months of the season when, they're probably going to be playing, four times in six nights.
Right.
A lot of times. So, I try not to put too much big picture weight in what's happened because, between the COVID stuff and just the league stoppages and all that, it's really hard to get a rhythm going at all. It's hard for me to get a rhythm going, and I'm not even putting skates on.
Do you find yourself, mess up your lead, or do you forget to put to indent in a new paragraph? What have been the problems for you?
No, I messed up everything. That's my MO.
Corey Lavallette, North State Journal, is with us here on the Canes Corner Podcast. What was the best thing about tonight?
Well, you know, I was a little worried about Seth Jarvis's game for a while, you know, and then kind of hit the COVID thing, and you wonder, you know, that rookie wall is going to come at some point. And, you know, maybe the Hurricanes have dodged a bullet with that a little bit by kind of a, you know, unplanned break for him. And I thought, you know, his goal, it doesn't look like much, I think, when you just watch it. But and I asked Rod about this after the game. And when you talk about player speed and things like that, most of the time you're talking about acceleration.
Yeah,
and the way he exploded in two strides to create space to tie the game and essentially get Carolina a point was an all-world skating yeah. play. I mean, I was really, really impressed by it. I thought, he was, he was good all night. You know, he almost scored in the first on that weird little spinorama backhand that Bobrovsky, I didn't think Bobrovsky was that good, to be honest with you. And I think if this was the normal Hurricanes that, you know, shell teams with 60 shot attempts they probably score five tonight. But, you know, that just wasn't there tonight. So Carolina kind of had to take what they could get, and they still managed to score three times.
Yeah, they had some bad angle chances that nearly leaked through. Svechnikov almost beat him near post on a low shot. Jarvis did as well. Yeah, but they didn't really put a ton of pressure on Bobrovsky. The Shea goal was a great screen in front by Stephen Lawrence. I mean, I think Lawrence might have even had a skate or maybe both skates in the crease, but there was no contact. Bobrovsky was so deep in his net. But I think Lawrence clearly bothered him, and Brady Shea can't stop scoring goals at this point. Maybe that's why Aho passed him the puck ahead. I think it was it on the power play or maybe shorthanded? I think it might have been a shorthanded try.
Yeah, it was shorthanded, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was, what is Brady Shea doing there shorthanded? But I would have rather have seen Aho shoot the puck. But I thought even the... you know, the way they played the game, the game-winning goal by Florida was sort of indicative of Carolina's kind of carelessness with the puck for the most part, because that's just such a high-risk pass that Brady Shea is trying to make. You're so much better off just hanging on to the puck and carrying it up until something really presents itself. I don't know what he was trying to do.
Yeah, I didn't love that play right from the second. It looked like he was going to try it. It wasn't like Aho would have even been totally in the clear. Maybe if it's a breakaway opportunity, you take a shot at it. But, you know, it was a low reward, high risk play, and it cost him. I mentioned Alex Lyon earlier, and I didn't love two of the goals he gave up, but given what he had to do tonight, you know, after not playing for 3 weeks, especially once they got it to 3-2, it felt like his game rounded into form. And, you know, you're not asking your third goalie to flat out win games for you. But I thought, you know, for my money, he was the better goalie on the night, and that's all you can ask for, really.
Yeah, I'm not even, like, I'm trying to think of, I really can't fault him on the first goal. Huberto in pretty close, and you're talking about one of the better offensive players in the league. I think maybe Jacob Slavin might have even deflected the second shot, the second goal that went through, the first of the two Verhaeghe goals. Maybe he should have had the third one. I don't know. Verhaeghe 35 seconds in. But I mean, nothing he can do on the game winner, and he made a bunch of really good saves. I thought Lyon made a bunch of really good saves. So do we have any idea what Frank Vatrano was saying to Alex Lyon? Was he asking him SAT questions because he went to Yale? What was that?
I don't know what that was all about, and I wish we had some. I guess we could have gotten some more insight. But Lyon didn't even turn around and look at him, so maybe he didn't even hear. But yeah, that was this has quickly become a fiery little kind of mini rivalry here. Both games have been very chippy. If you know the 10th game of the year was when Florida snapped the Hurricanes' winning streak. You know, that ended with some words with D'Angelo and a couple guys and the the rat shot into the stands and all that and all that right. stuff. And you know, guys like Gudas always have a tendency to kind of get, you know, and Lomberg too. Lomberg, I mean, that's the kind of guy that nobody wants to play against, but you probably want him on your team.
Sure.
He's a super pest that can play a bit. You know, I thought, you know, this little, you know, they're not going to play a ton of times like they did last year, but it seems like all the times they did play last year has kind of fostered this little rivalry. And these are two teams that could certainly meet deep in the playoffs, you know, given what they're both doing in the regular season.
Yeah, Hurricanes took at least a point out of every game last year, 6-0-2 in the 8-game season series. 4 of the games went to overtime. And I think Florida probably looked back on that last year and may have thought they were the better team. And I'm not even going to argue they might have been, to be perfectly honest. They were really good last year, too. And yeah, there is some bad blood between the two teams. What were your thoughts on the two third period penalties? The Brett Pesce interference, which I don't know that that was interference, and the Jordan Staal high stick.
You know, the Pesce one is the way I'd like to see hockey games called. The problem is, you got to call the whole game that way. And, you know, when there's a guy like Gudas out there who does that pretty much every shift, it's hard to call that on Pesce there. By the book, I think that's a penalty. I didn't love it, but you know, for somebody who I would rather see the game, I'd rather see the game wide open as much as we can. You know, that was, didn't love it. The Staal one, did they actually call it roughing?
They called it high stick.
Did they? I thought that they changed it to roughing.
If you were going to call it, if you're going to call anything there, it would be a rough, only because Staal had his hands up high. So maybe you do it there. I didn't think I thought the puck was still right there when Pesce made contact. They called him for interference. Unless you're going to call roughing on Pesce, and maybe his hands were a little high too, maybe he got whoever it was in the neck area. If you're going to call roughing, I would get it. But interference, I mean, the puck was right there. I personally didn't get either call, but because there was so much holding of the stick and extra stuff. How did Vetrano not get a second minor for what he was doing after he was sent off?
Yeah, there were a couple shifts where, there was one shift where two Hurricanes players basically got tackled, and I was just like, I guess we're not calling anything else. And that's when the kind of penalty box parade for the Hurricanes started, which felt like the dreaded game management
right.
Thing. And, you know, the only way Carolina got kind of snapped at a bit was with the puck over the glass penalty on Gudas.
Yeah.
I don't love games that are officiated that way. It just felt, it almost felt like it was, you know, meant to make everything even.
Right.
I don't love that. Either call the game tight and don't let all the clutching and grabbing that was going on happen, or, the ice wasn't great as it was. So
right.
It's like the fact that there were as many goals as there were surprised me, because you saw it on, Owen Tippett had that breakaway.
Jeez.
The puck, it looked like somebody rolled a bunch of marbles under the puck and put it on edge and shot it to the boards. I was, that's what's going to happen when you play the night before and then NC State comes and plays basketball in the afternoon.
We're talking with Corey Lavallette, North State Journal. I want to ask you about a couple of, you mentioned Jarvis, who I think has really kind of gotten his game back. And I like the fact that they put him with Aho and Teravainen in the last half of the game. I think it's a matter of time. I know Trocheck and Andre have a little bit of chemistry. I think it's a matter of time before we see Svechnikov go with Aho and Teravainen, especially if they can get somebody else going. And it leads me to this. Do you know where Martin Natchez's game went?
Yeah, he was not great tonight. And I think that was reflected in the little line shuffling that happened, specifically on the power play. you know, and that'll happen. Again, I mean, it's, to me, it's tough to judge anyone in these games because there's just so, there's got to be so much rust. And, you know, the fact that they beat Calgary last night when Calgary has, you know, had, you know, three games this past week, I was expecting Calgary to come out and just be the, you know, the way, like the way it was at the start of that game and just kind of dominate the game and be the crisper team. And then the Hurricanes found a way. And it kind of looked like that at the start tonight, too, that Florida was going to be the crisper team. And I think they were, but it was a relatively evenly played game, I think. You know, just not the greatest exhibition of what these two teams are capable of, but fun nonetheless, I think. But, yeah, Martin Natchez is, you know, he's still streaky, and the thing that really is interesting to me is how is that contract negotiation going to go? Because, you know, all the tools are there. I mean, I don't think we can, you know, he's the best skater on the team. He's got arguably the best one timer on the team. He plays in all situations. I'm sure his agent isn't thrilled with the way they split his contract a year and made him basically on a 4-year ELC. So they're going to expect, you know, compensation in that for that in this next deal. And, you know, while Carolina is going to have room to do what they need to do with a couple guys coming off the books, that one, you know, the Aho one was contentious, I guess, but it wasn't, you know, I don't think it ever got to a point where you seriously thought he was going to leave, even with the offer sheet. But the Natchez one is going to be, it's going to come down to what he does in these last, you know, 50 games of the 49 games of the regular season in the playoffs. And all the talent in the world. And I think he works hard. He does what Rod wants him to do as far as playing both ways. But, you know, it's still hit or miss there. And that's to be expected, I guess. It's easy to forget these guys are 21, 22. Right. You know, so many of these guys are still babies. You know, they should be in college right now.
We all should be in college, Corey. You know, it's interesting you brought up the fact that his agent probably is not thrilled that this is really the fourth year of a 3-year entry-level contract for Natchez, whose contract was able to be slid as a rookie, and then because he ended up going back to it was Charlotte. I had a lot of extra time on my hands this summer coming back from Charlotte and ACC Football Media Day, and I was just and I had written a bunch of stuff about the Hurricanes and I'm on a tweet thread and whatnot. And I got some pushback because I said exactly that. I didn't say that the team did anything wrong. I simply said that the agent can't be happy, and maybe Martin either, financially, that he's playing the fourth year of an entry-level deal. That he should have already this year. I mean, again, nobody's saying that the team didn't follow the rules. Team followed the rules, did what they could do. They took advantage of the rules. So, it does make this very interesting. If Montreal wanted Sebastian Aho 3 years, 3 summers ago, they should have blown Sebastian Aho away. They should have made it painful for Carolina to keep him. They didn't make it painful. The only pain will come with the next contract, so we're about 2 years away from an extension. That'll be the pain because Carolina should have 3 more years on this deal if they did it right the first time, but they didn't. So they're going to have to renegotiate with Aho sooner than they should have. But if some team, let's just say Montreal, you want to get back at the Hurricanes for taking Jesperi Kotkaniemi away from you, then you go and you sign Martin Natchez to a deal the Hurricanes will not match.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly a thought that crosses everyone's head. Is this thing going to carry on? But I guess it depends how much the ownership of the Canadians is bent out of shape about this because the whole front office is
right,
gone.
It's gone. Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, there's going to be decisions to make. And, you know, I think a lot of those, I think they love the player. I think you know, I don't know that the path is still there for him to be a center. You know, I think he's a really good right wing, and right wings are hard to come by. And all of a sudden you also have Kotkaniemi, who I think is poised to slide into that kind of second, third line center spot down the road, as long as that deal gets straightened out. And then, I mean, I think they think Jarvis is the center down the road too. And more these days, you know, and the way, you know, I didn't touch on this when you asked about it, but the fearlessness that kid has is what really impresses me most, maybe, because he's not scared to get hit, to mix it up, to, and he's not a big guy, and he's by no means a veteran guy. A lot of those kids become a little shrinking violet when that starts to happen, especially the smaller players. And so that makes me think he's, you know, I know they like him, and they'd like him in the middle, and you can play in the middle, and you play in the middle, you get the puck on your stick a lot more, and we see what he does when he's got the puck on his stick. So it's the Natchez, all of that pieces together in an interesting way when it comes to Natchez, because you don't get paid as much as a winger as you do as a center. And with Jack Drury, I think is already, I think, an NHL center now. If it, you know, if you needed, you know, he's not like Aho or other guys we've seen in the past where you had to kind of build their game on the wing and then say, okay, let's see how this goes. But that kid is, you know, Rod Brind'Amour dream player as far as two-way play. So that glut of centers they have makes the Natchez thing really interesting. And, you know, like I said, there's money coming off the books this offseason with Trocheck and Niederreiter, and you got decisions to make on those two guys. And everything we know about this front office says you don't give guys big contracts, you know, that's going to carry them into their 30s. So, you know, the Tony D'Angelo thing is out there too. You know, if you want to keep him, you're going to have to pay him more than $1 million.
Clearly. You think probably.
So there's a lot of moving pieces there, but I don't know. Everyone kind of had their eyes wide when the Hurricanes did what they did this past offseason, but it doesn't look like they made any wrong moves.
I think the front office basically hit on everything. All right, final thing for you, Corey Lavallette, then we'll let you go. What, 2 months away from the trade deadline, right? Is that what we're talking about, 2 months away from the trade deadline? It's early March, something like that, sometime in March for the trade deadline?
Yeah, it's a little later this year. I don't remember the exact date, but...
Because of the faux Olympic break.
Right, it used to be March 1st, but it's, you know, everything's all wonky now
because we're going to the end of April for the regular season. So if you had to say right now, obviously we don't know about... health, you know, if you lose a player at a certain position, your needs change. But right now, given respectable health, what would you target for additions by the trade deadline if you were the front office?
Oh, boy. You know, I think there could be another puck-moving defenseman that could help. You know, John Klingberg's name has been out there, and then today word came out that he's not so disrespected with how negotiations have gone with the Stars. And, you know, it's one thing to not like what your team is saying, but, you know, we know that the talks that the Hurricanes and Dougie had weren't going well, but we didn't really, you know, the fact that it wasn't done, we knew it wasn't going well, but, you know, we didn't hear a bunch of grumbling out in the public about it. And the fact that it's out there now makes you think, that's a guy that if Dallas feels like they're not going anywhere this season, then that's a guy you could target, I suppose. And, you know, I still think there's a future for Ethan Bear here, but ever since the COVID thing, he hasn't looked like himself. And I think that's why we see, you know, the plan was never to play Tony D'Angelo on the top pair. That wasn't the goal. This was not a let's replace Dougie Hamilton with Tony D'Angelo plan. This was a, you know, let's get Ethan Bear to handle the grunt of that top pairing role and groom him, and then let Tony handle the power play aspect of it. But Ethan hasn't, you know, his game has just not quite been there since he, maybe he's mad that he didn't get the private flight back like everyone else did. I don't know. So, you know, that to me, that's one spot is, you know, could you add a defenseman? And if, even if it's a depth guy, not a big splash like Klingberg, I don't know how much they want to have to rely on Brendan Smith in a playoff game.
Right.
A great locker room guy, and serviceable in the role he's in, but, you know, you get on the road in Tampa or Boston and all of a sudden they're throwing their top line out against your third pairing.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. So I think either a depth defenseman or an upgrade on defense is a possibility. And so much of it depends on Seth Jarvis, but I think you could still look at another winger. I think, you know, and I don't know that it has to be a scoring winger. And if the baggage wasn't what it was, an Evander Kane type is not the worst thing in the world for the Hurricanes, but I'm not endorsing that by any means, but if you can get a guy who's just a pain to play against, Ryan Lomberg to me is, you know, and you're seeing it a little bit from Lorenz as he's starting to become more physical, and I think that's where he's going to end up. But is he there yet? Maybe not consistently.
Right.
You know, Jordan Martinuk does that, but can he stay healthy?
Right.
You know, Jesper Fox is perfectly good player and does everything. He's almost like a miniature Jordan Staal on the wing with how smart he plays. But he's not going to, you know, the fact that he scored some this year, that's not what you pay Jesper Fox to do.
He's never been a scorer. He's 33 points is his career high.
So there's a lot to consider there. I mean, if Kotkaniemi can continue to be good on the wing, and I didn't think he was particularly noticeable tonight, but you know, that could be an answer there too. If he's not, you know, the fourth line center or the third line center, if Jordan Staal continues to have some struggles, but you know, there's so many moving parts, and that's the one thing the Hurricanes have done right is it's not like they've built a roster with you know, here's a piece and it has to stay here. They've got guys that can move to the center, to the wing,
yep,
can move up the lines, can move down the lines, and all of that gives them options, you know, without having to make a move. So, yeah, my gut says a defenseman is always good. Another defenseman is always good. And then, you know, when they tried it last year with Paquette and it didn't work out, but that kind of, you know, sandpaper, you know, like what Tampa did with Blake Coleman and Barclay Goudreau, that kind of sandpaper guy. You know, I don't know who that is off the top of my head right now. Like I said, the Evander Kane thing pops into my head just because he's in the news right now.
Right. I think you and I even talked about it recently because we played the Kings twice. A Brendan Lemieux type player, we could say him or not, but somebody like that, somebody, he doesn't have to provide a lot of offense, but he's annoying to play against, and he might create offense for somebody else simply by being a pain in the ass. So somebody like that is a player that I think the Hurricanes could add, but as you pointed, Jordan Martinuk could be that guy. If he could stay healthy, but he has not stayed healthy. I wonder if there's a little buyer's remorse on Martinook's contract.
Yeah, I mean, I think he took a pay cut and he got 3 years and they loved everything he's about.
Right.
In the, you know, he feels like he's the type of guy that when he's done playing, he could hang around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He kind of fits the fabric of what Rod Brind'Amour has built here. But yeah, I mean, the 3 years surprised me just because of the you know, the treads already started to show on the tires a bit.
Yeah.
But you know, he's certainly the quote unquote glue guy that every team wants. So, you know, maybe they could add, you know, they tried to do it with Hockenpah last year, maybe they could add Snarl on defense, instead of getting a you know, somebody like Klingberg or a depth guy or something like that. But, you know, Josh Manson was kicked around last year.
Yep.
He's certainly a guy like that. And if Anaheim falls out of the race, he's going to be he's on the last year of his deal. And that's a guy that I think would be intriguing if they feel like they need to add a little bit of that. But to me, it's always those forwards that, you know, when Corey Perry was available the last few years, I said, well, that's a guy that any team could use.
Sure.
Even if he's not scoring, just because I'll never forget him taking the stick out of Alex Semin's hands while Semin was sitting on the boards waiting for a line change. Just those little things that drive your opponents crazy.
Yep.
You know, and then, you know, the guy can still, you know, you still put the puck in the net. Maybe Jordan Staal can tease Eric for like the next 2 months, and then Eric can show up angry and he can be that guy.
Eric is skating, by the way.
Yeah, that's what Jordan told us the other day, was that he's skating and he's hoping to play for Canada and still has the quote itch to play. I don't know that there's a fit here for that, but it would be a great story, wouldn't it?
It would be amazing. I actually I ran into a very good friend of Eric's on Thursday, had probably about an hour conversation with a fellow 2011 All-Star. And he said what people are afraid of is making him their fourth line center. But he's the guy who could play the wing. He played the wing a lot in Montreal, played the wing some when he first got to Minnesota. There's nothing to say that he couldn't play the left side, either with his brother or with Kotkaniemi or somebody like that. And he could certainly still score, and he's a big body, and he can play physical. I mean, I wouldn't be against it, but I was told that he is keeping himself ready and he is interested in playing for Canada, although I don't believe he believes he's going to.
Well, I think if they were smart, they'd give him a call. I think I can't think of anyone better to captain a team of, you know, of guys who will probably be either, you know, out of the NHL stratosphere, or maybe young guys. You know, Owen Power is supposedly already planning to go and play for Canada.
Just send the University of Michigan over there.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, why not? Just barnstorm it.
All right, Corey, I'll let you go. I appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much. Follow him on Twitter at Corey Lov, North State Journal. Read his stuff online, and I appreciate it. We'll talk soon, man.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, let's get out of here. We thank Corey Lavalette for subbing for Alec Campbell. Kane's Corner Podcast is brought to you by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. If it's for the exterior of your home, you can find it at the Aluminum Company of North Carolina on Hamlin Road in Durham. Windows, doors, gutter helmets, roofing, siding, they got everything. Go online for a free no obligation estimate at aluminumcompany.com. You can follow the Kane's Corner Podcast. Shows up automatically wherever you get your podcast. All you got to do is find it, click follow, or subscribe, depending on what service you're using, and boom, there it is. And then feel free. You can rate us, tell us what you like, tell us what you'd like to see more of or less of, and it's just that easy. And I thank you very much for spending some time with us. Tough loss for Carolina, but at least they got a point because, in my opinion, didn't really deserve it. In the sense that they weren't the better team. And when you're not the better team and you can still extract the point from it, be happy, move on. Again, thanks to Corey Lavalette. Thanks to you. And we'll see you later.
This has been the Kane's Corner Podcast with Adam Gold, presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. You can listen to this podcast at WRALSportsBand.com or wherever you get your podcasts.